Cormac, say something profound.
Peace, love, namaste.
Oh my God, you're so post-progressive. Post-prog.
Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to The Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Living Project podcast. Today we're joined by JC, an ordinarily inspired human being. JC grew up on a farm in Western Australia near Perth, and today he is the director of experiential learning at an international school in Bangkok, Thailand.
JC essentially tells us about three key things. One, the importance of keeping life simple, enjoying the simple pleasures. The second thing is about defining your own success criteria and not aligning them to other people's success criteria or aspirational success criteria from society, but owning your own success criteria. And the third thing that JC tells us about that he's learned on his journey so far and is committed to in the future is the power of the wild in connecting JC with himself, but also connecting fully with other human beings in the moment, in the wild, away from all the noise.
We love this episode and we hope you will too.
How are you, mate?
I am 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, that is big. Tell us why.
I'm not at work. I'm drinking a gin and tonic and I'm talking to you two lovely folk.
Ah, that's what we want to hear. What's the time now in Bangkok?
It is 8:14 p.m.
So it's
post-meridian.
I can't wait to have this conversation.
It might get a little bit loose, but I think that's okay.
Yeah, let's do it. So what was your day like, JC?
Today was good. So some soul without much foresight has put me in charge of 33 grade 5 students. And they tend to bring me back down to earth pretty quickly with what they have to say about the world. They're all 10 years old or 11 years old. And so my issues in life quickly recede into the background when I'm faced with a, but he stole my pencil. I quite like it. It's teaching grade five is my meditation.
Your sense of reality.
Totally. Yeah. My sense of living in the now, right? There's no past or future with grade five kids. It's just Michael stole my pencil. That's all it is.
If only it stayed that simple.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're very, very literal. So, we're teaching design thinking at the moment, which, you know, design thinking to solve real world problems often starts with like a driving question, like how might we fix pollution in Bangkok, or, you know, how might we design something for this or that? So we always start with a driving question to get the students underway. And one of my students is like, why is the question driving? Why is the question driving a car? Where is it going? I was like, that's a good point. That is such a good point. Like, honestly, what a legend.
Yeah. Well, talking about driving questions, JC, the Living Project podcast is all about truth. And it's about talking to our guests about their truth from their lived experience. And to do that, we invoke the wild, the four elements in the wild of water, earth, fire and air. So our kickoff question is, as always, is which of those elements resonates with you the most?
I think, as I'm quite scared of scuba diving and skydiving, I will stick with the relative safety and grounding quality of earth. I grew up on a farm in Western Australia, and so I've always felt like I've had my feet and my hands in the ground, and that's the place where I've spent most of the time in the wild is on my feet hiking, in trekking, in numerous different countries around the world, and including my own home state. And that's where I feel most comfortable when my feet are touching the ground and I don't have to rely on a oxygen tank mm-hmm. in scuba diving or a parachute to hopefully open if I'm skydiving. So I definitely feel most connected and most alive when I am hiking on terra firma.
Nice. So there's that idea of the safety and the grounding and feeling most alive when you're connected with that terra firma. And you touched there on the fact that you grew up on a farm. Where was that farm and what, I suppose, give us a little bit about where that loving of being on terra firma and safety of security of the and the land and that your connection with the land, where that came from with your experience, growing up on a farm and in the Aussie bush.
Yeah, well, I kind of, now that you've framed it like that, I kind of feel that I was lucky enough to grow up with my family on that farm, and I really feel that, everyone currently alive on Earth is just one big family of the planet, of the Earth. And so we had 113 acres just northeast of Perth in Western Australia, about 45 minutes drive from the city of Perth. And all I remember is every day waking up before school, going down to the orchard. We had a fruit orchard. We grew mainly pears. We would pick fruit for 2 hours from 5:30 to 7:30. And then I would go to school, come back, do some more work. And then any downtime with my brothers, we'd be outside running around, kicking the football, throwing down some cricket balls. And all of those activities on the farm were outside, feet on the ground, hands in the ground. Literally my family's survival came from planting trees in the ground, selling the fruit from those trees. And I was a cog in that. I was a real part of that, like a needed cog. And having seen firsthand how, being involved in a primary industry like fruit growing really is such a simple and amazing way to look at life. There's no complications. There is, we need food to survive. We plant trees in the ground and we harvest fruit from that. And I think my lived experience from growing up on a farm is that sense of, literally down to earth, values with my family are working hard, and like if we don't tend to the fruit trees, if we don't tend to the farm, we get no harvest, we get no yield. And that's kind of how I live my life. If you're not putting any effort in, you're not getting any output. So I really feel that maybe my connection with the earth was started through growing up on the farm and running around with my brothers outside and doing everything in the fresh air attached to the ground.
Okay. Now that's really interesting because you touched there on a philosophy of, that's kind of how you live your life. You've got to put effort in to seek outputs. Now, obviously, we met through an organization through World Challenge, a magical company that facilitates young people getting out in the world and exploring. And we're going to come to some of your exploration. But one of the things I'm interested in with you is that obviously we've talked about and you've alluded to us in our questioning before this, that there's been a bit of a journey for you about actually what those outputs in adult life might look like. So you talked there about this, the simplicity of the relationship on the farm and how it was there's a simple, understandable relationship. I'm wondering if in those conversations before this podcast, you've alluded to the fact that some of those outputs that you then went to chase as an adult potentially were not simple, and you've gone through a bit of a process of busying your life with aspirations and then almost, is it a sense of remembering the simplicity of things, or is it redefining things, or what?
100%. It's almost like a constant daily effort to remember those simple times and those simple inputs and outputs that on a farm are very visual. They're very tangible. Whereas in like the modern, you know, adult existence is mainly online. Like we're bloody online now. Like it's not very simple. If anyone was listening to the how to, we got the audio hooked up. It's not bloody simple. Like, but one of the things I do remember often is, and I compare it to my current job and my current lifestyle is, if you're on a farm, you work until the sun goes down, and then you're done. You spend that time with your family afterwards. But in other professions, maybe in the podcast profession, you're up all night editing, or you know, as a teacher, you're planning for the next day. You're always thinking and thinking deeper and deeper. And you don't necessarily have the sun going down as that regulator to stop, think, breathe, and be with the people that you care about. It doesn't exist in the online world now. It's 24 hours. There's no kind of sit and breathe time. And another kind of defining experience in addition to the farm was my first travel overseas was into North America to go work at a pioneer camp. And at this camp, we had no power or electricity in the cabins. All the boys we were looking after were staying in like log cabins. And I remember rocking up there. It was cold. I was walking through the mud. There was mosquitoes. And my brother had taken me here to this camp in northeastern America. And I was so angry at my brother for taking me to this place because I was so uncomfortable. How am I going to live without a hot shower, or if, you know, in a log cabin where there's going to be black bears coming in, all this type of stuff? And I hated it. Honestly, I could say I hated it for the first 2 or 3 days. And then once I understood the simplicity of the surroundings and the fact that I didn't have to work at nighttime, all I had to do was go down to the pond for a swim, be with my friends, be with people who are like-minded to me. I ended up loving that whole camping experience, and I went back for the next 2 or 3 years. And I think the values and the vision that I kind of learnt at, you know, on the farm and on camping abroad and trekking abroad is that it's just connected with me so much more, and it's so easy for me to feel happy talking with people about this, doing these type of simple things in the wild, as it is to my current life, which is living in Bangkok, which is a massive concrete city with complex things going on, you know, all the time, and lots of pollution problems. And so I do often yearn for and remember that the times on the farm, the times camping, maybe the times trekking with you, Josh, and the times at World Challenge for all of us, where it was, yeah, we need to be out in the wild more often because it is so simple. You find food, you eat, you find shelter, you sleep, and that's how I like to live my life. And so I try to introduce some of these things into my daily teaching at my school, and into my own attitude to each day, so I don't seem to get too flustered at the concrete jungle that is Bangkok, because I have this kind of baseline and foundation of, actually, it's not, my issues today aren't that a big of a deal.
Yeah, JC, there's a bit of a journey you've taken us on already, you know, that early childhood of grounding and these other experiences that have made you appreciate the simplicity of your early life, and how you can get back to that. But you've also explained to us the fact is that you live in one of the largest cities on the planet. It's 24/7.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. And
it's the worst Into the Wild living podcast ever.
You know, what we're trying to get at is you've understood what helps you in life, the simplicity and being in the wild, but yet you're in Bangkok. But at the same time, you're telling us that there's things you've learned on your human journey that enable you to survive, maybe even thrive in Bangkok. So what are the things you've taken from that, the, you know, your earth, your grounding, and how are you applying them in your current context to enable you to thrive?
Yeah, great question. And it's something that I think about a lot. If I think about the farm, or trekking overseas, or my first like camping experience overseas, I always think of, if you are hiking in the woods by yourself, nobody's going to steal your phone or your wallet because no one else is around. Your possessions and yourself are actually the safest you've ever been. And I remember thinking that when I was hiking in Tasmania one year, like, I don't have to, like, lock up my phone and my wallet and my possessions because no one's out here to steal any of that stuff. And so one thing I bring into my Bangkok life at the moment is having these cash-only nights. So you leave your credit card, your bloody iPhone SE 11 Pro iPad thingamajig at home, and you go out with $20 and then you see where the night kind of takes you. It means you're living in the moment. You're not attached to the world. No one can steal anything from me. No one. I'm not looking after my possessions because I don't have any in that moment. So I really enjoy those. You're by yourself in the wild. Like, you're having this cash only night, and that's quite freeing for me. It's such a simple, small thing to get through the day, but I love it. I walk or ride my bike down to a restaurant. I've got $20, and that's my night. And I think that's something that I've learned from. Yeah, hiking abroad and being by myself in the wild is, you've only got something to lose if you have something.
Hi guys, just a quick interruption from us. Enjoying today's Ordinarily Inspired chat? Yeah, us too. To join the journey, you can follow us on social media at It's The Living Project. Or if you fancy a really powerful wild experience yourself, check out our website, www.thelivingproject.life, and have a look at our Wild 24 and other stuff you can get involved with. On our website, you can also become a patron. We love making these podcasts, but it takes some effort, and we'd love you to join the community and support our efforts in finding everyday epic people around the world to explore their journey with the wild and to share their experience with us all. www.thelivingproject.life, and that's become a patron. Any amount will be gratefully received. Right then, back to the chat.
Yeah, I love that. You've only got something to lose if you have something. We know you grew up on a farm. We know you went to for a few years to an American pioneer camp, and we know that you're now living in Bangkok, working as a teacher and taking some of those lessons into your everyday life. A couple of times though, you've mentioned this trekking in the wild, the importance of that to you. So maybe this is a nice time to explore, I suppose, some of the highlights. You're someone who spent a lot of time in the wild, and I'd love to hear about some of those experiences.
I think they've given me a framing point, a reference to not take myself seriously in the grand scheme of things. It's given me lifelong friends. It's given me incredible perspective. But being hungry or going without water on a trek is up here. Having someone yell at you at road rage in Bangkok is like quite a lot lower than that in terms of what I give a shit about. You might have heard of that term. I'm not sure who the writer was. One of you smart fellows would know that, you know, a person is happy commensurate with the amount of things they can let go. And I feel I'm an Olympic gold medalist at letting shit go. I really think that's the one thing I've nailed. I've stuffed up a lot of things, but that's one thing I've nailed. I really don't care about too much besides my great friends, my family, and being happy. And I feel like I am one of the happiest people I know. And I think a lot of that comes back through that perspective that I learnt on many different treks overseas. One in particular was in Lesotho in Southern Africa. Went to this incredibly small village, and I found out through our interpreter that the average life age in this village, the average human life expectancy in this village was 29. And I was 32 at that time. And I was thinking, if I was living in this village, I would already have lived my life and gone. And from that moment on, I kind of thought, hang on a minute, I've got life pretty good in Australia where I was kind of coming from at that point. There is no reason for me to complain if I run out of Wi-Fi data, if my car breaks down. Like, none of this stuff really matters at all. And I didn't learn that out of a book, Josh and Cormac. I had to learn it because I was told that. I was in this village in Lesotho when I found out that they only live about one third as long as that we live in the country that I'm from. And that just made me kind of stand up and think, I need to be a lot more positive. I need to reframe life. And it's probably one of the major reasons why I think I'm so happy at the moment, is that I'm already so privileged, already so blessed with so many things.
I lived in Lesotho myself for 2 years, and so I visited many villages. So I instinctively know that experience that you're talking about, JC, and maybe many of our listeners will also. The other thing that's really interesting in what you're saying, you know, often, and it's not a judgment, you know, we have guests on, and we obviously listen to lots of people who are very fated in our society, aren't they? People that have, in order to deal with life, they choose very big tasks to get into, like, I'm going to climb Everest, you know, I'm going to cycle around the world. And you know, these are great endeavours, and there are certainly people that do need to do that kind of thing, but that's their way to somehow work things out. What you're telling us is maybe somewhat a different experience. It seems to be about simplifying things and really trying to appreciate the things that you've got right in front of you now, rather than having to go off on some massive, great, big adventure, you know. So what would you say then, you know, are your success criteria is not climbing Mount Everest. I clearly get that. So what are some of your success criteria that you find that make you happy?
Yeah, I feel like you've read my mind a little bit there. I think very similar to a lot of people. You know, everyone's been through, you know, hard times. Everyone's been through great relationships and not so great relationships, and great periods and not so great periods. But I think the one thing that I found really effective, especially in the modern world, is that, you know, I'm the only person in charge of my own success criteria. You know, why do I need to earn X amount of money or be married by 20 or have kids by this time if that doesn't suit me? And so I've really gone a little bit overboard in simplifying my own success criteria. And so when I was going through quite a difficult relationship period, probably about 10 years ago, I read a book called As a Man Thinketh. My brother gave it to me, actually. And that was, the main premise was, whatever you think you are, which sounds a bit hippie-ish or whatever. But I kind of really took that book to heart and thought, okay, yeah, my life is my mind. The world is how I perceive it. And from then on, I started about 10 years ago, started to change my day-to-day success criteria. So it's not earning X amount of money or trying to find a lifelong partner. It's actually about opening the door for someone, buying someone a cup of coffee. And if I say that's what my success criteria is, then I've had a successful day. And that's it. I've gone so overboard with simplifying success criteria, but it works for me. Maybe it works for some other people. Like, you're in charge of your success criteria. You can be successful now if your success criteria is to talk on a podcast with Josh and Cormac and sip a gin and tonic and a cup of tea. That's done, because I feel happy doing it. There's no ulterior motivation or, you know, other far out there thing. And that's, I think about that a lot. I talk to my students about this. Why isn't being nice or opening the door for someone physically your criteria for the day?
Other than the book and coming out of that time and getting to this point where you are now, like, what have been some other, like, I suppose, trigger points or things that have made you be able to look at those things, to accept at the same time that, you know, you're having a hard time, you mentioned a hard time in a relationship, or, you know, that you have difficult periods, and also, but also be able to appreciate and acknowledge, you know, a daily, you know, this success criteria that is your own and is daily and actually leads to more long-term happiness, because you're not focused on being happy at some point. You're focusing on doing what you know is right to do for you now, and the future writes itself. But like, what is, are there any other, you know, I suppose, big moments that have helped that or triggered that in any way?
Yeah, I think I've been quite blessed to travel the world a lot personally and through work. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to is that that perspective of privilege that I have, and that's where I draw my most power from. I still have bad days. I definitely don't think I have a fix-all for myself or for everyone. I still have hard conversations and hard days. One story that kind of comes to mind is in about 2006, I was in Vegas, Las Vegas, for some unknown reason.
it fits so well with your personality.
Yes, totally into the wild in Las Vegas. And we got offered on the street, me and my friends, we got offered in the street tickets to this magic show. And they say, we'll give you free tickets to this magic show at the Bellagio or whatever the hotels are there, like, if you come to kind of this sales pitch, like this timeshare condo sales pitch. We're like, sweet, we're in. We're going to come to this timeshare sales pitch. And we get into this sales pitch convention center, and they're like, you know, they're priming us for a sale, basically. And they're talking us through it like we're babies. And they're saying, all right, what would you rather have? Would you rather a tin shack in the bush? And they show us like this in the forest, and like they show us this black and white photo of a dilapidated shack in the bush. Or do you want this 5-star 18-bedroom mansion on the lake in Florida? And they're expecting us to say, oh, we want the lakeside mansion in Florida. And we're like, we actually want the tin shack that's in the black and white photo. We actually genuinely want that, because that's what makes us happy. That's what makes us thrive. And back to your question about other moments, that was like a stark moment to say, actually, I feel like maybe the majority really are wanting this other external success criteria. They got this motivation to get this house, family, kids by X, Y, and Z age. Actually, I know what works for me, and that is being in the wild, being with my friends, sitting around a campfire. And so I will take the dilapidated tin shack every single day of the week, because you know what? If you're out at a tin shack with a very bad ceiling or a roof, or if you're out camping, you can see the whole universe. You can see all the stars. Why would I buy a house that costs $5 million to put like a ceiling or a roof between me and the stars and the universe? I would never do that. And so that was a moment, a very bizarre, obscure story where I was like, that is exactly what I want. Thank you, weird salesman from Las Vegas. You've helped me a lot.
But would you say that those success criteria, right? So you, there's clearly this, you know, there's a huge degree of self-awareness in you. And you know, you looked at that thing and you were able to step away from the aspirational success criteria that being imposed upon you by somebody else who subconsciously had it, imposed upon them. Do you think people who are after those things, do you think they're genuinely after those things, or is it a success criteria that actually that's the crux point, is you really need to have the faith in yourself to set your own success criteria?
Well, I think setting any criteria, whether it's my own or thinking about how others might set theirs, it is a little bit fraught with danger, isn't it? You set an outcome and you don't get it, maybe you don't feel so great. So I'm kind of thinking, should we be setting this success criteria at all? And I think a lot of people that that are very close to me have success criteria. They want a house, a marriage, a baby, or whatever, and they really want those things. And I see it makes them so happy. That's fantastic. But what if you had a success criteria to achieve X in your life, and for some unknown reason, physiologically or otherwise, you couldn't attain that? Then that's like a first class ticket to, feeling like you're without something, or you're feeling that you don't have something that you wanted. Whereas, you know, having a more success criteria that's more attainable or more day-to-day available, then you're not going to have that big letdown. And I think that's certainly something that I'm also, you know, quite strong at. Like, I certainly have goals for the future, but they mainly, for me, revolve around situations and experiences and people that give me energy and make me happy. It's not, it's not a hotel on Mayfair that I'm kind of chasing, because so many things could get in the way of that, but not many things can get in the way of me talking to my friends and going on a hike on the weekend, staying in a cabin, looking up at the stars. Like, not many things can get in the way of that. So I try to avoid setting these outcome-based things.
I feel there's a new novel in the penning, Fear, Loathing and Enlightenment in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
by JC.
A reduction of your success criteria in Vegas.
I love it.
I love that. Not being outcomes focused, being experience focused. I think that's hugely powerful and really hugely healthy.
Yeah. JC, we've talked a lot about Earth, but I'm also intrigued. You know, you told us right at the beginning, perhaps before we got on air, that water wasn't necessarily your favourite element, but nevertheless, you're hugely reflective. And we know that water is the element that helps us with that reflection. And so clearly there is that water element strong and flowing within you. But I really like to progress on to thinking about fire, because, you know, you grew up in this farm, you've travelled, your perspective has broadened. We met you at World Challenge in a kind of youth expedition company, and here you are now in Bangkok, and you're a teacher. So, I mean, something in you, there must have been a fire, something that ignited some kind of change in you that led you to becoming a teacher, which I think is a fantastic and really awesome profession to be in. I would say that my wife's a teacher, but you know, what was the fire that ignited that change in you from the travel industry into becoming a teacher?
I think we all have a responsibility to teach others around us, whether we are in a formal role or not. And there's a classic teaching quote, which I'm sure your wife knows, Cormac, that, you know, a child or any person is a fire to be lit, not a vase to be filled. And mm-hmm. I certainly have that same experience for myself. I feel that the fire that was kind of lit under me was that travel around the world and to get that perspective of traveling. And now I feel it's almost my responsibility as a teacher of students and the people around me to share that experience with them. Some of the students I teach were born in 2010, 2011. Mm. I'm not even sure if any of them have been outside before, but they grew up in a Wi-Fi wireless world, totally online, with no kind of, not respect, but no kind of appreciation for what it means to survive in the wild and what it means to, you know, get along face to face with another human or in a community and to be a part of that. And so I feel that quite strongly every day that I've kind of gone from traveling into more of an educator role. And that is, it is the most important thing for me right now to teach others about the value of social connection and the value of connection to the environment. Because otherwise, it's going to be all lost. We're going to keep building buildings up higher. We're going to keep laying more concrete. And so we're not going to be able to see the environment or each other at all. And one of the daily visual reminders that I get here in Bangkok when I walk or ride my bike past all the condo is that we are so separated right now. We connect through the internet and underground sea cables, and it's not a human experience at all. People used to gather around the fire and talk and solve problems in that community and around the world. But now that we have central heating, every room, every condo is equally heated. There's no reason to leave. But a few years ago, we would gather around the ocean for a swim. We gathered around the fire to stay warm. And that's where we make these very important human and social connections that I think has been our survival. And I think what you're seeing at the moment is this super separated society that doesn't know how to function in many countries around the world right now. We know how to post a derogatory comment on the internet. We actually don't know how to sit around and talk a problem out or a situation out. And so I think my main drive for being a teacher is almost one of survival. Like we need to have this human social connection in our young folk. Otherwise, we have nothing.
Yeah, powerful, powerful listening. Just digesting it. Yeah, I love that imagery of my time living with woods people in Sweden. You know, the fire was presented as the heart of everything, where you eat together, where you discuss things, where you resolve things, where you learn to listen, you know. And with that in mind, JC, with you, when you talk about those passions and values and beliefs that you're committed to, and you've chosen to be in education in order to be a part of that, how do you in your life now, like, live your air, that you're like, how do you find those things that are important to you being in Bangkok? So you've talked about it, you find it through education, through being involved in education, but how else do you find those things now that are important to you?
Yeah, it's a little bit harder being in Bangkok for sure, but I have made a commitment with myself to get out into the wilds at least once a month, which might be a train ride up north or a train ride down south, and a trek in the wild. Last weekend I was in Chiang Rai up near the Burmese border. Did a few treks up there to different coffee plantations and, you know, funnily enough, met some real humans up there, not over the internet. And so I think I cannot teach what I preach without, you know, doing it myself. And so I certainly get a lot of happiness and mindfulness and awareness out of still being in the wild myself. And it's a key component to my happiness, to be fair. Like, yeah, I want to have a great job and, a great relationship here in Bangkok and a great life. But I also need to maintain these connections to the elements that your podcast espouses, which is so, so important to being a human, that I have made that commitment to get out once a month. And if I'm not staying in a tent or under the stars, staying in a homestay and cooking a meal with a community or a culture that I don't know, and seeing the sunrise and seeing the sunset, which I did every day on the farm during harvest season. You'd see the sunrise and sunset every single day. And that's something that I prioritize in my calendar here in Thailand, to make sure I am out there in nature, breathing the least polluted air I can outside of Bangkok.
Wonderful. JC, thanks so much for being a guest on our podcast today. I feel that it's been a very honest conversation in which you have taken us on your journey of truth. And that started way back on the farm, and it's served you well through the years. That simplicity of being on a farm, as you said, you know, rising with the sunrise and finishing work with the sunset. And you've left the farm and you've gone on some incredible journeys around the world, which for you is what's given you perspective. And the real learning that I've taken out of this talking to you is that your happiness has come from trying to keep hold of that simplicity even in the busy metropolitan modern world. And for you, that's really about setting your own success criteria. And yes, sure, sometimes you fail, but you try to keep it simple. And there's something that we can learn from that. And your journey's also gone from full circle in you being a teacher and wanting to impart your knowledge of from travel and from how you've grown up to young people, particularly because they live in a much more disconnected world. And the image I've got is of you being the fire starter and lighting the fire and gathering your community around you, whoever they are, friends, family, or your students, and really helping everybody really understand maybe the kind of the simple realities or the simple elements of living a good life, which really is about connecting with earth, with water, with fire and air. And you've talked us through that today. So, you know, thanks very much, JC. It felt like a really truthful, honest conversation.
Yeah, I wasn't lying. I was definitely telling the truth. And it was really, a great experience to go through today. It was almost like, a bit of personal growth for me to actually say that type of stuff out loud once in a while. Like anyone can go back to their, you know, their diary at night and write whatever they want, but I think to say it out loud is and live it is very powerful. And to, you know, almost have you lads and the podcast and other people here as kind of your spotters, I think is equally as powerful to bring other people on the ride, as you say. So yeah, I really appreciated the time today to say it out loud and put it out there in the universe. And I think the people around me and the people around you both are all the better for those thoughts and words and podcasts like this one. So yeah, thank you so much. And can't wait to chat again next time.
For sure. Thanks so much for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed our conversation with JC. What a treat. We look forward to seeing you next time.
And in the meantime,
be true, live wild.
You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.